Hello and welcome to a shortcast from the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. Though these short shows haven't received a name yet, as I record this, we'll have one here in a couple of days. And this episode includes some updates, not only on that, but also look to some on-the-ground strategies that were brought up by Hal regarding climate change, drought, and dryland permaculture. Though my work here in Pennsylvania at the moment is dealing very much with wet production issues and this long, damp spring that it looks like we're going to have, I'm constantly considering the strategies that I'm going to use in order to prepare for a change in climate. A lot of the numbers that I've seen regarding climate in North America is that it's changing at a rate of about 3 miles per year, or about 30 miles per decade, so that what I might have expected here 10 years ago is now closer to the climate that existed 30 miles south of me. So in reference for that from where I live, when I first moved here, I had the climate that I had, but now, almost 10 years later, the climate here is closer to what I might find in York, Pennsylvania. Because I plan to live here for probably the rest of my life, and I'm only in my 30s, I have another 40 years, 50 years, maybe even 60 years or more, in which I have to respond to the changes in the climate. So now I'm getting into much, much broader distances where I have to consider the climate that will be, well, let's say 50 years. That in 50 years' time, I'm going to have to consider what the climate is like 150 miles south of where I live. Or say I want to plan for my great-grandchildren's lifetime 100 years from now, that's 300 miles south of where I currently live. Which means that in my lifetime, I'm looking at the climate of Northern Virginia. And within the life of my great-grandchildren, the climate of North Carolina. That's a pretty big and substantial change in that time. With that, there's a possibility for more flooding. There's also a possibility for hotter, drier weather. And because how you indicate considerations for the American Southwest, I've had some of these conversations with a friend of mine who's a forester and how to implement a food forest in that kind of an environment and with this weirding weather and when it's dry. So here are a couple strategies and techniques that come to mind for that. My first strategy is to look for plants that can grow in a broader range of environments. So I go through books like Jackie and Tonesmeyer's Edible Forest Gardens, and I'm reading through those tables in the back, looking for plants that are already adapted to Virginia or the Carolinas, and consider planting those in place of the ones that are regularly here in Pennsylvania, or, like with many of the brambles and blueberries, plants that can live in a semi-shaded environment where I might be able to use the canopy to protect the smaller plants from the damage of the sun, while knowing that they're already broadly adapted to a wide range, so I can plant them here safely with the intention that regardless of how weird the weather might get, they can stand up to those conditions. Plants that have a very narrow habitat range are less likely to be selected unless there's something that I'm including for transition, because they are a plant that we currently eat and want to include in the landscape while we develop recipes and ways to eat these other foods, like many of the perennials that are available. In other cases, I'm also looking to the native plants, the ones that haven't been bred as much to produce the very large fruits. And this is just an experiment on my part with the thought that the smaller fruits require less water to get to size. And because of the sometimes thicker skins, that those plants might have a better chance of producing edibles that I can eat. When it comes to establishing a food forest, mulch is one of my biggest friends. And because of that, and as I mentioned, my friend who's the forester, we talked about the idea of building a shallow depression, planting a tree in the bottom of that, and then putting a heavy mulch ring around the edge to capture and help water to infiltrate. And that's one possible solution. There's an idea similar to this that I found within some of the agricultural techniques in Africa referred to as zai. And in that, you're planting not only trees, but even your seeds in the bottom of a depression to help capture water. And in those hot, dry climates, my understanding is that what happens then is that as the seed germinates and starts to grow up, that the depression that you've planted them in also helps to shade that young plant from the worst of the sun's heat, because it's not getting the full day exposure that it might if you plant it on the soil surface. So that's another technique to explore. And the last thing for me, when it comes to adapting to hotter, drier climates, one of the strategies that I think about is just building soil. That really the best way that we can store water is in our landscape. That unless you put in a very large cistern and in some way build what you're doing to be able to capture all of your excess rainwater, a small rain barrel doesn't do a whole lot. It's a great idea, and certainly I encourage anyone, if you want to learn how to capture and handle rainwater, a rain barrel is nice. But a rule of thumb that I was always given is that your garden will need 1 inch of water per square foot per week for like an annual vegetable garden, which if you've ever calculated rainfall, it comes to be that 1 inch of rain on 1 square foot is going to be about 78 ounces of water, or 0.61 gallons. So to put that in perspective, your 50-gallon rain barrel, if full, will help you water 80 square feet of garden space. When you consider some of the numbers for feeding a family of four, requiring about 5,000 square feet of garden space for a year, you're going to need to capture a lot of water to do that. So rather than try to do containers, though they do certainly have a place for emergency watering, there are other strategies we can adapt to make a difference. And one of those, as I say, is to build soil, which allows us to get more of that water in the ground where it is useful. But I'm not going to say that I'm an expert on building soil. It's something that I'm still experimenting with in my own space, using wood chips and nitrogen-fixing plants and green manures and some other things that I've tried over the years. But Hal, based on your suggestion, I want to follow up on some of these ideas and reach out to some folks who do have more experience on building soil and storing water. So I'm going to go through some of my resources and reach out to some of the folks who you suggested, as well as some of the others in the community, and see what we can do about getting more information on this topic for those people who need it. But as I say, for me, the two biggest strategies that I have right now are selecting species for the projected changes in the environment, as well as using mulching and planting techniques in order to help store and conserve water. We'll work on building soil in other ways here sometime in the future. If you have some recommendations on how we can adapt to a changing climate, I'd love to hear from you so it can be added to the conversation. As always, my phone number is 717-827-6266. You can send me an email, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, or if you would like to add to the conversation directly, leave a comment for this episode in the show notes. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast, or send me a message on Twitter where I am @permaculturecst. Before we bring this to a close, a couple of updates and a request for your support. As many of you know, I can't do this show without your help. Go to thepermaculturepodcast.com/support and make an ongoing monthly contribution or a one-time donation. Both go a long way to helping me keep doing this. If you're not in a place to do that, also spread the word. If there's an episode that you really enjoy, share it with a friend. I've gotten messages from many of you that you're sharing the Faith and Earth Care series with the members of your body of faith and with others you know who practice faiths that are different from yours. And the other way to help is to go and leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast site. Let people know what you value in this so that they might find it and value it as well. Now then, for the update. Thanks to your responses for these short episodes. From the feedback I've gotten, they've been very valuable for you. In order to keep these going, one of the best things that I have for getting things done is a good schedule. So what I want to do is release the shorter shows on Mondays and Fridays and move the interviews to Wednesdays so that there's some space in between for folks to be able to catch up and listen without having all of these kind of stack up on top of each other. And then as topics for short episodes become available, there's some space there where I can include those as well, maybe as a weekend update or on Tuesday and Thursday, depending on how much you let me know that you would like to hear more about. And that's going to bring this episode to a close. Thank you for joining me for this shorter presentation by the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. You'll find the next interview, which is with Adam Campbell and wraps up the previous two conversations, out on Wednesday, April 2nd. Until then, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.